Welcome to Latte with a Lawyer, a podcast dedicated to bringing you the stories of some of America's most successful lawyers, figuring out what makes them tick, how they creatively solve problems, and how others aspiring to be them can follow in their footsteps.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to another episode of Latte with a Lawyer. I'm your host, Jonathan Brickman, and this afternoon we have with us from Georgia, Doug Chandler with his own law firm, Chandler Law. Welcome to the show.
Thanks, Jonathan. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
You bet. Absolutely. So first question, to keep with the theme of the show, Latte with a Lawyer, what's your morning beverage of choice to get started?
Yeah, that's a great question. A lot of water. I usually drink a lot of water in the morning, get up at 5, go work out. And so I need a lot of water. There you go. Here's mine. I do have to caffeinate as well. And I started off drinking coffee when I was in the Navy. And I came home on leave one time and I poured a big cup of coffee and put some cream and sugar in it. And my mother turns around and says, "What are you doing?" I said, "I'm putting cream and sugar in my coffee. What do you mean? What am I doing?" She goes, "Don't you know that real men drink their coffee black?"
That's fine.
So from then on, I started drinking coffee black. So that's the way I take it now.
That's hilarious. Wait, your mother said that to you?
Yeah. Thanks, Mom. Right.
That's hilarious. Actually, yeah. That says a lot. That's interesting.
Yeah.
So I saw your background in the Navy. I saw you. I mean, aren't you supposed to drink beer when you get out at the port?
Well, of course. But, you know, when you're on duty, you have to drink coffee instead.
Right. Okay, good. How long did you spend in the Navy?
4 years on active duty and then 10 years total. And with a reserve commission. So it expired.
And then done.
Yeah. The commission expired in 2002. And then I was already practicing law. So.
Oh, I see.
Yeah. Practicing law. Yeah.
Do some people keep that commission? So you're in the reserves?
Correct. I was an inactive reservist, for a lot of those years. And, it was supposed to expire in 2000. And then I got a call to re-up for another 2 years. And I asked the petty officer, I said, "Look, I'm sitting on the 39th floor of a building, you know, with air conditioning and all of these, you know, nice amenities. What would you do?" And he said, "I'd stay right there, sir. Let's compromise. So give me 2 more years. And I said, "I'll compromise with you. 2 more years. And then, you know, a year later, we had 9/11. And I started wondering whether or not, you know, I had made a good choice or not. But certainly would have gone back if I was called, but was not.
Oh, I see. So when you're in the reserve, you could get called.
Correct. That's correct.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Yeah.
Interesting. And my dad was in the Navy at the end of World War II. He actually had rheumatic fever when he was on the boat, so he was discharged. Who knows what would have happened if had he not been.
Yeah.
So interesting. And then he became a lawyer.
Very cool.
So.
Yep.
So tell us about that. Tell me what kind of law you practice and how you got started and all that.
Yeah, sure. So our firm handles primarily lawyer issues. I started off as a plaintiff's lawyer, suing lawyers. I did a little bit of ethics defense work in that past life. But as time progressed and I represented a lot of uninsured lawyers and some lawyers in bar complaints and those sorts of things, and also lawyers in fee disputes and firm dissolutions, all those sorts of things that affect lawyers.
Sure.
I started getting called to defend lawyers more and more and more. And so that's kind of grown. I still do handle some plaintiffs work, have a couple plaintiffs cases going, but do also quite a bit of defense work and a lot of other things too, advising lawyers on how to stay out of trouble and, you know, protect their reputations because, you know, our reputations matter.
Oh, absolutely. So, yeah, I mean, you know, you were kind to send me your book here, which I read a little bit of. And actually, I did pick up in that book, Minnows and Sharks for Everybody, that lawyers do not usually have malpractice insurance. Is that correct?
Well, most lawyers do have malpractice insurance.
They do.
They do. That's right. There are some that do not. And that comes as quite a surprise to a lot of folks who call and frankly, want to sue their lawyer. I've heard it time and time again. Wait a minute, lawyers don't have to have insurance. Yeah, they don't have to have insurance. Well, doctors do, but yeah, that's not
Oh, I phrased it wrong. They don't have to get it. That's what I meant. Okay.
That's right. Yeah. They don't have to have insurance. They're not compelled to have it in Georgia. But there are a lot of reasons why you want to have it. Certainly,
sure.
You know, you want to be able to sleep at night. Right. and you know, protect your downside and not have to pay out hundreds of thousands of dollars in defense costs if you do get sued or you get a grievance filed against you.
So. Sure. Yeah. Which is part of the game. Of course, everyone's going to blame the lawyer if they don't get the right outcome.
Right? Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And even if they do get the right outcome, sometimes they still get blamed. Right.
Yeah.
So,
right.
Cost too much, took too much time, you know, those sorts of things. So.
So why this brand of law? Why what you're doing?
Yeah, great question. So when I got out of law school, I interviewed around, quite frankly, I got this great offer from a lawyer who was kind of a pioneer in this area, named Frank Beltran. And what I really liked about this area of the law is the legal malpractice case itself is the case within the case, right?
Yep.
Talk about that in the book. So, you know, in order to be successful in the malpractice case, you have to show that things would have been different had the lawyer not made the mistake. So you have to show that you could have been successful below, the transaction would have been successful below, you know, had the lawyer not made a mistake.
Mm.
So it's always changing, right? You have the malpractice case, but over here you have a completely different personal injury case one day. The next day you may have an estate litigation case. You may have a complex tax issue. And so it's ever changing. And for a young lawyer with mind going every which way, it's kind of cool that you get to focus on a lot of different things, different types of cases. You get to go hire great experts to get involved in the case. And you get to learn all these different areas of the law, shade tree mechanics, so to speak, from a malpractice standpoint. I mean, I'm not an expert in that area, but I get to learn about it from these other great lawyers and experts out there.
Yeah, interesting. So you say you're a generalist because you're generally defending lawyers that are being sued for malpractice. So you don't become an expert in truck accidents, right?
Correct.
Per se.
That's right.
Interesting.
That's right.
Yeah, that's interesting. So only lawyers too, not doctors or other professionals?
You know, through the years, I've sued some doctors, never defended doctors. Through the years, I've sued some accountants. I've defended some accountants. I've sued some, real estate agents, some insurance agents and those sorts of folks through the years. But right, primarily now, we are completely focused on lawyers
okay.
only.
So that's a niche. I mean, how many people across the country do that type of work?
You know, I don't know nationally what that number may be. There are quite a few quite a few defense lawyers that defend legal malpractice cases.
Yeah.
There are a lot fewer plaintiffs lawyers out there who are known that focus on legal malpractice plaintiffs work.
Mm.
I'm a member of an organization called the American Board of Professional Liability Attorneys, and we focus on legal and medical. So there are two groups within the big group, and there are very, very few of us in that group that focus on legal malpractice. In Georgia, there are only two, myself and one other person, who are certified by that organization. So.
Okay.
In legal malpractice.
Sure. And how often are lawyers sued for malpractice?
You know, here's the interesting thing. There's no hard data on it. But from what I understand from conversations with folks in the insurance industry, it's about 4% of the lawyers in Georgia.
Okay.
Should expect to see some sort of a grievance or a claim brought against them. Not to say that there's going to be litigation and a trial and those sorts of things, but some sort of a claim would be brought against them on an annual basis.
Mm.
Claims have been down, frankly, over the past couple of years. But with COVID and with financial crisis, you know, or recession looming and that sort of thing, it's anticipated that claims will start to go up again. And also, you know, we've heard that, you know, we're in the largest transfer of wealth in the history of mankind. And so claims and estate and probate are anticipated to go up as the years go by.
Okay. Is that so? We're in the largest transfer of wealth because of the population aging?
Correct. That's yeah. Right. Yeah, you got it.
So this, so I mean, it's interesting. I just read a statistic the other day that you probably saw the same thing. China, for the first time, their population is shrinking.
I did see that.
Did you see that?
Yeah. Yeah. Amazing, isn't it?
It is amazing. Their one child policy came back to bite them.
Right. Exactly.
Right. Yeah. Now they're trying like heck to like, you know, induce people to have more kids, and nobody wants to.
Right. Well, you know, maybe that's not such a bad thing, you know, but when the population starts shrinking.
I listen, we have too many people on the planet consuming all the resources. So
right.
Population shrinking a little bit is a good thing.
Yeah.
Particularly with in cases where they might not be so benevolent. So that's okay. How'd you become a lawyer? So you were in the Navy. Is that post college or is that pre-college? When did you go into the Navy and when did you make the decision to become a lawyer?
Yeah. So the notion of becoming a lawyer started pretty early.
Okay.
In my life. I grew up in a small town in Northwest Georgia, a small town called Lafayette, Georgia. The locals call it Lafayette. So we know whether you're from around the area or not, by the way you pronounce it.
Yeah, I understand. Yeah.
And most of the folks around that small community who were, you know, well-respected, who I looked up to, both in the community and in church, were lawyers, right?
Okay.
And it always seemed like those people got hit with the heavy questions. You know, they were confronted with the what do we do scenario, whether not just on a legal level, but
yeah, general. Yeah.
Just in general. And so I kind of wanted to be one of those people who got called to analyze the tough situations and, you know, be a trusted advisor, be someone who somebody would look to for steps on how we handle whatever the situation may be.
Mm.
My family had six Ace Hardware stores
nice.
when I was growing up. And, you know, from time to time, we'd have these legal issues that would pop up, right?
Yeah.
My dad had one person he would call on, and he always gave great advice and kept us out of trouble. And I thought, wow, that's pretty cool. And then in high school, I got into a mock trial competition, and our team won, and I got Best Advocate Award. I don't know. I think back about some of those arguments, and they were pretty silly. But, you know, anyway, so that was kind of the start of the thought process. And then the Navy came along. They were paying me to go to school at Auburn. And,
I see. I was, so they paid you to go to school.
Yeah. Okay. So I was in Naval ROTC there and then got commissioned and graduated. And I had to do the Navy time before I could go back to think about law school. So law school was kind of a secondary career route once the Navy ended. So that's how I made it there. And
interesting.
Love being a lawyer, love lawyers, love helping lawyers.
Yeah, interesting. Actually, I didn't realize that there was a Naval ROTC. I took one ROTC class when I was a college student. It was just honestly to get an easy grade. And it was I did orienteering.
Must have been the Army, not the Navy. Then that course, that easy course you took.
it must have been. It was an orienteering class.
Okay. Yeah.
Which was really fun. Like you had to figure out like how to navigate and kind of, it was like a combination between running and hiking and like, you know, using a map and getting around. It was really
all sorts of benefits to that class then.
Yeah. It was actually really fun. Yeah.
That's cool. Yeah.
But I had no interest in actually going into the military. It was just a way to get an A because all the other, I was an engineering student. All the other classes were too hard.
What school was that?
I went to Carnegie Mellon in Pittsburgh.
Okay. All right.
So I was an engineering student and it was like, it was a challenging place. So I was looking for, you know, something to take the load off a little bit.
Sure. I understand. I understand.
So you have always practiced this flavor of law since you got started? Interesting.
Yeah.
Wow. So you're an expert.
Well, I mean, I specialize in it, right? We focus in it. I have been asked to be an expert, a standard of care expert for lawyers.
Okay.
Whether it involves, you know, what the lawyer should have done or could do, or, you know, were they acting ethically? You know, were they following the and abiding by the rules of professional conduct as governed, you know, by the Georgia bar and the Georgia Supreme Court? So those are primarily the issues that I've gotten called to testify about.
So is there a lot of money at stake in those cases potentially?
Usually, yes.
There is.
Usually, yes. Yes.
I mean, aside from being disbarred, if you're not, you know, practicing per the standards, I understand that, but there is a lot of money at stake too.
There are. I mean, you know, there are a lot of smaller malpractice claims running around. And those, you know, usually get resolved fairly quickly. But there's some big dollar cases out there, certainly. Yeah.
And absolutely. What would those be? Like, give me an example of that where there would be a lot of money.
Yeah. So we had a case once, this was a plaintiff's case that we brought, and there were tax issues involved. We represented a corporation. So there were some tax issues involved. And then there was a missed IPO we alleged was caused by the negligence of the malpractice of the lawyer and the large firm. And that those damages, you know, went from, you know, $20 million in excess tax owed up to $255 million and a loss by IPO benefit. So,
oh boy,
big dollar damages in that particular case. Okay. Now you don't see those every day.
Well, that was an investment bank, I would imagine, right? On the other side, maybe?
Well, we actually had an investment banker expert involved in that case, along with a nationally known tax lawyer as our standard of care expert, and in addition to a CPA firm that was a damage expert for us. So we had three different types of experts in that case.
Okay, interesting. Yeah. Actually, I had a relative who had the executor was an attorney, family member, and actually I had that attorney disbarred. I just remember that my great aunt, I had the attorney disbarred because he was taking the money from.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, literally, I just hung up the phone before this podcast with a firm that had called. Asking me to take a look at a case, a potential plaintiff's case against a lawyer who was found by the receiver appointed by the court to misappropriated, you know, a large amount of money. And so we may be taking a look at that case, but good for you. I'm glad you were able to.
I wasn't the attorney, but I knew I could smell it. And I knew that there was a problem there. And I asked some questions and then I brought an attorney in to try the case. But yeah, it was in Massachusetts. That's where I'm from. If you couldn't tell my accent, I live in South Florida, but I'm a Yankee.
I couldn't place it, but yeah.
But in any event, we did bring the case to the court in Massachusetts and had the lawyer disbarred.
Wow! Wow!
And my aunt was not a rich person; was very modest means, and this relative was absconding. Taking misappropriating funds. Can you imagine that?
And so the relative, the relative disbarred was also a relative.
Correct.
Oh, wow.
Correct.
Wow.
So who knows? I mean, people do desperate things when they're in trouble. I don't know what his personal situation was, but
yeah.
At least we got some justice on that.
I mean, you know, you might not have recovered a bunch of money, but at least you got your pound of flesh, right?
Correct.
Yeah. Good for you.
We did. So very interesting. Is there any like a big case that you worked on that sort of stands out? That was a memorable case.
Yeah. You know, there's that one that I just mentioned.
Yeah.
That big damage case that I just mentioned. There was another one that really stands out where we represented a fella who it just so happens he was a lawyer. Been to law school. He'd passed the bar. He'd never practiced. He was a business guy.
Okay.
And had several companies and alleged malpractice against a firm here in Georgia. And we represented him for 7 years. And the crazy thing about it is we're in discovery and an issue comes up that we have to take up on appeal regarding discovery. And so while the case is up on appeal to the Georgia Court of Appeals and then later the Georgia Supreme Court, the insurance carrier for this firm, the defendant law firm, comes in and files a declaratory judgment action seeking to, you know, rescind the policy for failure to give notice of a claim and trying to get out of coverage.
Mm.
That case rocked along. So our case was actually stayed pending the outcome of that declaratory judgment, but the appeals kept going and on our issue. And it's significant because the Georgia Supreme Court came back and in its opinion basically said, when you sue a lawyer, you waive your attorney-client privilege with that lawyer that you sue, right?
Mm.
But guess what? You also waive your privilege to any other lawyer or law firm that you've consulted with about those same issues that you now allege malpractice against the defendant firm. So it was an expansion of the attorney-client privilege and waiver of the attorney-client privilege in Georgia. And so that was a significant case in that, you know, we were, you know, writing some new law. But that case rocked along. There was collateral litigation in California. And after 7 years, we were able to resolve that case globally with a nice seven-figure payment for our client. So he was happy as a clam. And quite frankly, he sent me a really nice email that said, you know, you have restored my faith in lawyers. Because all lawyers that he had dealt with up until that point in time were not the, you know, not the best lawyers that he, you know, and he had a bad taste in his mouth. So
interesting. Was that a contingency case for you or no?
No, that case was not a contingency case. That case was an hourly case.
Okay.
That was the fee arrangement that he chose. And in fact, at the end of the day, he ended up spending less an hourly than he would have if he had paid me on a contingency fee. So he was happy with that too.
Oh, I would think so.
He felt like he made a wise choice. So
sure.
Yeah.
Well, that's always the big sort of incentive or on the plaintiff side, right? Where you share in the proceeds.
That's right. That's right. Yeah. And you know, we see a lot of different types of fee disputes between lawyers and between clients on contingency fees and hybrid arrangements and all sorts of things. So you're right. The majority of those cases are plaintiff's cases are contingency based.
So you say you do a little bit of plaintiff work in the event that you don't have a conflict, though. When do you choose to do plaintiff work? Like, is it just comes up in the normal course of your business?
It does. Yeah, okay. It does. I don't necessarily go out and market for it. It just comes up in the ordinary course. Folks that know what I do and, you know, they call and run things by me and see if I'm interested in handling. And a lot of times I can point them in a direction that, that maybe they can go for a while and see if they can get it resolved. And,
yeah. Okay, good. What was I going to ask you? I know I was going to ask you. Does any of the work that you do bring you into a courtroom where you have a jury trial? Is that part of what you do?
Oh, absolutely.
Oh, yeah. It is. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. The majority of the professional liability cases, you know, get resolved short of a trial.
Yeah.
But yeah, we've had several trials on the malpractice cases over through the years. It does bring us into a courtroom, but you know, lawyers want to try to avoid juries. And the uncertainty that they feel like they face and the reputational harm, and they don't want to be dragged through the mud in an open courtroom. So,
right. Well, unless you have to, right. If you're not getting what you want, then you have to go to trial.
Right. Right. I mean, we have a case now that, we're defending a lawyer and, you know, he didn't do anything wrong. And if the case doesn't go out on summary judgment, which we think it will, but if it doesn't for whatever reason, and there's no appeal, of that summary judgment, we're going to trial and, you know, actually look forward to it. Look forward to getting those folks on the other side on the stand. So I get pumped. You know, the adrenaline starts going, and it's like the big game, right?
I would think you would enjoy that. So that's kind of why I asked you in the event. Yeah. So in this case, I mean, how do you prepare for that? What's your strategy? What's your methodology?
Oh man, it starts weeks, months in advance, right? I mean, you really should start preparing a case for trial the day it comes in the door, really. You know, you start thinking about how it's set up. You start thinking about your theme. You start thinking about which witnesses. And as the case develops, obviously those things change, right?
Sure.
And, you know, as an old guy told me once before, one of the old war horses, he said, you know, the case never gets any better than the first day it came in your door. Right. So, and there's a lot of truth to that. So you start preparing from the very beginning and getting ready.
Okay. Interesting. And do you do mock trial? You said you're a participant in mock trials. So you do that in your practice or focus groups?
Yeah, some focus groups and that sort of stuff. Obviously, I noticed you guys, you know, your company.
That was a leading question there.
Yeah, gets involved in that, you know, and that is fascinating to me. The read on the facial expressions using AI. I mean, that is just, that's cutting edge material. And it looks just absolutely fascinating. So.
Yeah, well, listen, we can give you a chance to take a look at it. This is not the purpose of this discussion, but as an aside, yes, we are.
Sure.
In that business. And it is quite an interesting solution that we've created, and people have just makes the whole process efficient, and you're gathering information that you otherwise would not be able to gather.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Did you get into that with your engineering degree? Is that how you kind of?
No. I like to tell people my path in life is very crooked. I've done lots and lots of different things over the years. I mean, yeah. I started off as a civil engineer, and I worked in the field. My first job out of school was at a nuclear power plant.
Oh, wow.
I wrecked the second unit of a nuclear power plant.
Wow.
And then I worked on a small construction job in upstate New York. Then I went back to business school. I've done lots of different things over the years, but mainly in the last 25 or so, like software data type of companies, startups.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, it makes life interesting, doesn't it?
It does. I mean, that's kind of fits my personality anyway. I like, sure. it's fun stuff. I like businesses where there's a problem that needs to be solved and we can engineer a solution to solve it.
Yeah. Yeah. That's very cool. You know, in litigation, a lot of times the solution is out of our control, right?
Yeah.
Because there's so many other factors involved, and sometimes it's hard for clients to understand that. You know, they feel like you're the powerful lawyer; you should be able to make the circumstances fit and it's best for them. But sometimes that's impossible.
Right. That is very true. Well, listen. Just to round it off here, what do you want to leave with the audience about you, your firm, and the best way to connect? Just final thoughts.
Yeah, sure. I appreciate that. Obviously, we have a website, chandler-law.net, where you can learn more about the firm and what we do. And we try to post some relevant content on there and for folks to read. And we get good results from that, and we get some good feedback from those articles that we put out there. But you know, the main thing is, buy insurance, have insurance, get malpractice insurance, get grievance insurance, which come within those policies, know what you buy, get appropriate coverage for your practice. And, if you get a claim or grievance, don't panic, right? Don't panic. Report it to your carrier, get somebody involved from the very beginning to help you respond, because we have obligations as lawyers to, you know, advise our clients. We have a duty of candor to our clients to tell them about a mistake if a mistake is made. And we always want to try to get a lawyer involved. And don't do it yourself. Don't offer refunds. Don't admit liability, all these things. Mm-hmm. You know, don't try to do it on your own. Get somebody involved. You're too emotionally attached and you just can't adequately respond. You'll end up doing yourself more damage and more, you know, financially and just from an emotional standpoint, it can kill you. So get somebody involved, get some help.
And you can help people nationally or just in the state of Georgia?
Well, I'm licensed in the state of Georgia. I have gotten involved in cases on a pro hoc vice basis,
okay,
you know, case by case, sure, where the court allows. So we have gotten involved in some cases in other states as well. So,
excellent. Good. Well, listen, excellent. Really fun learning about that. I think you're the first I've talked to that does what you do. Your flavor of law. So good stuff. I learned a lot today.
Thank you, Jonathan.
You bet. So Doug Chandler with Chandler Law. And this is, as you generously pointed out, this is promoted by Emotion Track, which is a legal tech platform. And we help litigators prepare for mediation and trial with our Insights platform. Thank you again, and enjoy the rest of your day.
Thanks, Jonathan. Thank you. Bye-bye. Fantastic. Bye-bye.